those forms he's got and take one sheet and identify the steps like you're doing, and then number those forms so we know we have a sequence or render them or something, so that we don't lose the bubble, because we're going to have to start getting them chopped by Fred's office.
I already sent the two of them. That's really I'm only concerned about is the entry and testing agreement. That's the initial one.
United States of America, and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you very much. All righty, today we are here for budget review and the agency presentations, and we'll begin with Fire and Rescue Association, John Lye, President.
Well, good evening.
Good evening, sir.
Thanks for letting us give a chance to talk. You have the budget here. There's a couple things I'd like to...
Tab 35, ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah. You have it marked for us. Very good.
We're going to 14.
I'm sorry?
We're going to 14.
15.
Leave 15 open. Please.
Leave 15 open.
Okay.
So you'll see there's been significant changes from our budget request to what the county administrator recommended. There was some significant increases, and I'd like to explain those. The one thing I would like to point out in the county administrator's request is that Chief One's budget was reduced to zero. And that's going to be hard for him to do with a zero budget to do what he does, which includes fuel, maintenance, and so forth. The numbers that I've provided there are direct from the treasurers of the various agencies. That's what it actually cost us to do business. That's buying the diesel fuel, that's buying oxygen, that's paying for bandages, that's repairing damaged equipment, replacing broken equipment, and training. And training is a big part of what we do, and so that's included in there to keep our members' skills up to date. So those are the numbers I put in there, as I said, directly from what our treasurers of the various agencies told me that it is what it costs us to actually do business. In the past, some of that was offset by fundraising, but with revenue recovery has been impacting all of us, our fundraising has significantly taken a hit. And so those monies are no longer available to us to the extent that they used to be.
What did it used to be?
I can only tell you Lake Monticello.
Right. Yeah, sure.
We were typically getting on the order of about $100,000 to $125,000
okay.
a year
That's
in
good.
Fundraising. We're not going to be anywhere close
right.
to that this year. Last time I talked to our treasurer, we were at about $65,000. I am assuming that Levanna County Fire... the rescue are also being impacted as well, but I don't know those numbers.
We don't do that much, so it doesn't impact us near as much as it does the bike.
Right.
They depend on it.
Yeah, we've been depending on that for quite some time. But that said, as you can see, cost of everything is going up. Those are the numbers that it cost us to do business last year, and so those are real numbers. Is there anything, any questions I can address that you have?
What all did you say was in your zero budget?
The zero budget, that's Chief One's budget. Actually, would you like to address that?
Yeah, that's fuel, maintenance, cell phone, off my car one that I operate. Then the rest of it is discretionary that I use for different things for the general good of all three companies.
So what has been in it in the past?
$10,600.
Oh,
10-6. 7-0 for this year's. The other thing I'd like to mention, although this is the operational budget, can I address the CIP as well?
Sure.
Yes.
Okay. There were several pieces of apparatus in the CIP that have been pushed back.
It wasn't funded last year.
As you probably know, we have an apparatus replacement schedule. National Fire Protection Association defines the life of a fire engine at 20 years, and ambulances, we use an 8-year cycle. The ambulance for Fulvana County Rescue has been left in the request. We also had a request for a fire engine, some Lucas CPR assist devices, and a Support 56, which were in there, which have all been moved back. Engine 30, Mr. Sheridan, is at end of life as well.
27 years old, I believe. Correct, Mike?
That's correct. Yes.
And Support 56 is also a 1991, so it's also 27 years. So it's well past its lifetime. So I would also like to suggest that you consider funding those purchases as well. And the Lucas CPR assist device, we've gotten the first one. We just had the trainings, and it's now being deployed on the first two ambulances at the lake at this time. And we'll be reporting back to the county administrator on how well that's working.
The CPR device.
Yes, sir.
What is the purpose of that?
Basically, it is an additional crew member. So when you, particularly when you have a two-person crew, a driver, and an AIC in the back, the CPR assist device replaces somebody doing CPR compressions. So it is a machine that basically doesn't get tired. It does perfect CPR the entire time that you need it. So it is an additional crew member. When you only have a limited number of personnel.
Did we buy some of those?
We bought one.
You did, okay. Yes. And yeah, that was for testing purposes, and
yeah.
You're pleased with the results of it?
We have not used it on scene yet. It just got deployed last Friday night.
Oh, okay.
So we finally got it in. We had to go through some pretty extensive training in its use, mm-hmm. and we had enough people now trained that we were able to put it on our first D-truck Friday night. Mm-hmm. And we haven't had a cardiac arrest since then, so that's a good thing.
Good. So your ultimate objective is basically for each station to have one, is that?
Well, Fulvana County Rescue will not be deploying them right away. The objective is to put them on each of Lake Monticello's four trucks in the response car at this point. The operational medical director for Fulvana County Rescue has not given them permission to use them yet. So it'll be just at the lake at this point.
Mm-hmm. Is it a relatively portable device? Or,
I mean, it is. I wish I had one here. It's about the size of this black backpack right here. Mm-hmm. It weighs about 20 pounds. And it's got a lithium battery in it, but it can also be powered off ACs.
Yeah. You still have two people on the truck.
There'll be two people on the truck, but if you're doing CPR, if you're doing compressions and you've got a driver, that's all you can do. The provider can't provide oxygen via bagging. Or any applied medications or anything like that. Basically, what they can do is compressions. So it frees up the provider to do additional work.
Can the trucks carry more than one passenger?
They can, yeah. And if we have enough people, especially on a cardiac arrest, we'll often get a lot of extra people as well, but we can't count on that. Especially if it's 3 in the morning or, you know, in the middle of the day, which is where we struggle.
I'm sorry, I didn't really mean passengers as much as another injured person.
Yes. So if you have another patient, though, you have to have an additional provider, because you have to have a provider for each patient.
And each truck can haul two
and 20,
right?
Sorry?
Each truck can haul two patients.
That's correct. So that comes into play when you have a mass casualty.
Any other questions?
922.
All right, Mr. Weaver.
No.
Ms. Eager.
41.
Good.
So,
thank you.
So,
right,
before you go,
yes, sir.
Mr. Chair. So, a couple things. If we look at last year's budget, then I should have called and asked about this, but it's completely slipped my mind. When we went through the budgets and looked at them, last year's budget for fire and rescue did not include funding for Chief One. It wasn't in there. And this year's budget, when it's submitted, we're looking at the original submission didn't include the $10,006 for Chief One. So I added it on there on the fiscal year 19 request. This one. I added it on there, and we zeroed it out because it wasn't ever requested, and I put the $10,600 there from prior years. but it wasn't in, it wasn't approved for last year's budget, and it wasn't in the budget request that was submitted. So that's what the confusion is. I'm not suggesting we don't need it or not. I'm suggesting that it wasn't requested. It wasn't approved last year. It wasn't requested this year. And that's why I put down there's a placeholder on there so we can talk about it. It's just not there.
Is that something that y'all as the Fire and Rescue Association could have allotted the 10-6 out of the money you were given?
But wasn't Chief One paid out of paid to Fluvanna Fire previously?
It was always a separate line in the budget.
I thought it came in.
Yeah, it's always, I think, been a separate line item.
Yeah, up until last year, it had always been 10 or 10-6 or something around there. And again, the budget request, you're looking at the one here, the actual document that came in didn't have it on there. The line wasn't there.
Now, Mr. Nichols?
Yes.
And yours in the blue, you've just broken down at 632.
508.
I haven't done the math right now. 508. Okay.
The 630.
Essentially, that's level funding from last year.
What is the big increase for?
Lack of.
Lake Machado, predominantly, that went up by 70,000, and then it went up 20 on Fluvanna Fire, 20 on Fluvanna Rescue. And they seem pretty consistent. It's about 20%.
Last year, the lake was funded at 270,000, and they said that 100% last year was 300,000, if I remember, 307 or something like that, and now they're at 347,000.
And we were trying, 3 years ago, to go to full operational funding for the Fluvanna Rescue, Fluvanna Fire, and Lake Monticello combined, and we got the Fluvanna Rescue, Fluvanna Fire pretty close right up top to it last year, but it was a bridge too far to go to full funding for Lake Monticello that year, and just because this budget year is hard,
right.
I level funded in there, and that's why they're marked in blue, because I knew there'd be discussions on them. But this one, it can go back in. It's just that it was never requested, and so we put a placeholder there so we could talk about it. I don't know why it's not there, but the budget request didn't
have. What exactly is
even in last year's budget, this is the fiscal year 18 adopted budget, and there's Fire and Rescue, and it's not even there. It's just those three, the 508, 500.
Chief One's always paid the Fluvanna Fire, so that's where I'm not sure. They may have been
rolled in. That's what I was saying. It probably rolled in, and y'all just took it and separated
probably
it.
Probably was in the previous year. We can go up to go back to 17 and look at it.
I received it last year.
Yeah.
I received a 10,000.
I think that may be right, is that all the three agencies were rolled together, plus Chief One's budget.
Okay.
So in previous years, Lake Monticello's fundraising hasn't really shown up as a line item in the budget because we don't provide But that additional $70,000 requested by the lake is in essence to address the shortfall in the fundraising.
Well, two things. Go ahead.
So part of it is to address the shortfall. Part of it is to bring to 100% funding from 75% funding, which is where it was this year. So as Mr. Nichols said, there was a commitment made to try and get operational expenses covered by the county. And historically, it had been at about 48-50% for the lake, and over several years, we've been bringing that up to 100%.
Yeah.
We're at about 75% this year, and that's a large part of that increase is going from 75 to 100%.
And when revenue recovery was proposed and we looked at it, it was explained to us that we would likely see a dip in fundraising efforts. Are you progressing forward, seeing some improvements there, or is
not
it
yet.
Not yet? Okay.
Not yet. We have been told by other localities that it takes a dip for 3 to 4 years and then eventually recovers.
Okay.
We're still in the dip phase, so we're hoping it will recover, but we just don't know. We can't guarantee that.
Okay, great. Thank you.
All right. And no other questions?
Yeah.
Mr. Lyle, thank you, sir. We'll now move forward with 6-7, Cooperative Extension. Ms. Mayo.
Air conditioner.
I just heard it. It's all
turn the fire on.
It's cold in here.
Fireplace.
Yeah.
I wore my sweatsuit.
Okay, on the count of three, everybody hug.
Oh, well.
Watch out.
It's cold. Yeah.
was warm first when I got
here. I'm not going to brag. I'm just going to point out I'm not the interim extension agent. I am your extension agent. I'm
I know you are.
Agent for the county. I have assumed the unit coordinator position that John Thompson previously held. We are still.
For real?
Yes. We are still waiting for an agriculture and natural resources Yay. Agent. So I'm not John Thompson, but I am your unit coordinator.
Oh, you're a lot better than John was.
I just want to remind you, the first line item in our budget is staffing contract services. So I wanted to remind you what you get in that line item. In our office, you're only paying into two positions. That's mine and then our vacant agriculture and natural resources position. The other two permanent positions are our unit administrative assistant. That's Brittany Redman. And family nutrition program assistant. And those are grant-funded and state-funded positions, respectively. So just wanted you to know. You also pay into positions in other counties. So these are folks housed in Louisa, Albemarle, and Green that also serve our clients. Two agents there of the 30% salary split that we pay as a locality. Fluvanna pays about 25% of that towards Krista Hopkins and about 20% to the Albemarle position. So we get family consumer services service in the nutrition and in the finance field, so we can't physically house them in Fluvanna. Additionally, you have three other agriculture agents that provide services. And just because you see their emphasis there in parentheses, that doesn't mean that's what they're limited to.
Awesome.
Certainly, if we have somebody call with a pasture management question, our agent in Albemarle can answer that. It's not just limited to horses. Kind of like John was a small ruminant guy. He's not limited to that. He can serve folks with pond questions, too. Mm-hmm. So any questions about our staffing in general? That's the bulk of our budget. We're pretty straightforward. So we're not able to, recover funds, I suppose. So the way that we kind of capture our impact is through our volunteers. So we use that volunteer hourly rate and approximately 8,600 hours of service. So for every dollar you put in, you're looking at almost $3 in return through volunteer service. And that doesn't capture impact on knowledge gained. My farmer has learned skills from our program and therefore increased his income and therefore his taxable income. It doesn't work that way for us, so since we're in the education realm. I just wanted to highlight some of our volunteers. I also would like to highlight our program impact. It's not just to brag, it's to let you know what our need is. So in 2017, we offered two new STEM programs, one week-long and one club-based, two of which actually were at school. We reached 1,700 youth. We have another, 1,800 to go. So in that, I manage 167 volunteers, of which 68 were youth volunteers. And since 2009, we've had a 254% increase in enrollment. This was before John Thompson left us. We are short-staffed now, and I was already at capacity, so this is what you see in the budget request. John mentioned this last year, and if he didn't, I'll over the head, but he's gone now. We're looking at a part-time position to kind of ease that burden. If I can reach, with volunteers currently, 1,700 youth, what can I do with a part-time program assistant? What will our reach be then? And I'm not just talking youth, I'm talking youth and families at that point. Some of the duties are highlighted there, some administrative duties, some clerical duties, but programming out in the field, in the school system, doing 4-H programming. Just so that you know, we're looking at a bulk amount, but it would not put any other burden on the county as far as HR responsibilities. It would be managed by VCE. It would be all of the hours and supervision would go through VCE. You would just get a quarterly bill, just like you do already for our salaries, contract service line. And I will note that we have them in these surrounding counties already. Buckingham, Albemarle, Louisa. Orange has one, even though they don't touch us. And Nelson has closed theirs. They are in the interview process right now. So, there's the figure at the bottom, 16,323. I know the gift that keeps giving. However, if you expect us to continue to offer quality programs for our youth, I think this is one way that we can increase our touch on our population. Do you have any questions about this proposal?
Anyone? All right, I'm going to ask a question. Two of the positions are not filled. Do we get anything back because of that?
So you are not filled.
Right, so we're under budget on that because of the positions not being filled.
Right. So what we have done in the interim, we have proceeded with an emergency hire to help with our unit administrative assistant goes out on maternity leave, which means the door to the office will be closed. If I'm on a program, Faye Anderson serves six counties, the door's closed. Somebody comes in for a soil sample, somebody needs a weed identification, they don't receive service. So our emergency hire is in process, which will use some of those salary savings. We expect that even after that, if she were to work 40 hours a week for 130 days, we still would have a surplus of about $5,000 to $6,000 right now. And that's assuming we were to hire Kelly Thompson's position back before the start of the fourth quarter.
Okay, how many?
That money won't carry over to next year as vacancy savings if they hire somebody new.
Correct.
So it won't.
They won't pay back pay him or her or
no. But that money's gone. We just didn't. We never paid it, and so the 16 is all brand new money for next fiscal year.
That's what I was wondering. That's part time too.
Right. If they hire somebody to fill those,
it's not in the budget. 20 hours a week is what we are proposing.
The interim that Ms. Mayo is talking about now is I told her to go ahead a couple weeks ago, and we talked about it because of the savings, it's not impacting our budget, and because. Ms. Redmond is going on a maternity leave. She needs coverage for that, and that's what they're doing with part of the savings right now.
Okay, you say you serve 1,700 children.
1,700.
Okay, what programs are you serving them?
So we have clubs that we offer year round, and approximately 200 kids enrolled in clubs, and those mm-hmm. are your long term involvement, teen leaders club, shooting sports club. The bulk of those participants are through our after-school program where they meet monthly. They at least receive 6 hours of programming throughout the year, and then we can enroll them. I'm trying to think of the in-school programs you may have been familiar with in the past, the Reality Store program. I do work with sixth grade teachers. We take sixth graders to Holiday Lake for natural resources education programming, hands-on, on the water, talking about habitat. You can't get better than that.
Mm-hmm.
Great.
Terrific Tuesdays probably serves how many?
Terrific Tuesdays at the middle school averages about 140 youth per semester. Some of those are repeats, but the bulk of them second semester are brand new.
Wow.
Yeah. Carysburg only touches about 90 to 100, depending, and that's limited by just volunteer and staffing at that point. So we kind of thought third and fourth graders, we don't want 176 at one time until we get that 4-H program assistant.
Okay.
Any additional questions?
Anyone? Ms. Eager?
So here's the budget, just so you recall. And that's what that 16,323 is for that new part-time position. Not funded in, but for the baseline plus, it would be an additional 16,323. And it's on your budget balance worksheets.
Thank you.
Thank you, ma'am. Mm-hmm. All righty, and we will move forward with social services from Ms. Kim May.
Good evening.
Good evening.
Good evening, dear.
So our budget request for fiscal year 19 doesn't differ very much from our fiscal year 18 budget, other than a couple of things, and I'll get into that.
Just left mouse.
So first of all, just real briefly, just to tell you a little bit about what we did in fiscal year 17. So this represents the citizens of Urbana County that receive benefits through our office. We determine eligibility for Medicaid, SNAP, which is food stamps and PANA. And so this is an unduplicated number, and you can see it over the last 5 years, it's held pretty steady, right, over 4,000. Took a little jump from 2016 to 2017, so we're up to a little more than 4,300 people in the county are receiving at least one of these benefits.
Is it more in one category than another? Do you have more
it
in SNAP?
Medicaid.
Mm-hmm.
And the number of people receiving SNAP is actually going down.
Oh.
But the number of people receiving Medicaid is going up.
Okay.
And that's sort of been the trend for the last couple of years. Fiscal year 17, with Medicaid, FAMIS, SNAP, PAMIS, and energy assistance, over $22 million were paid out to citizens of Urbana County. Now, I do realize not all of those dollars are spent in the county. But that's what our flu van is and the benefit is from receiving benefits.
Maybe that should be a new rule.
Uh-huh.
Maybe that should be a new rule.
Quite sure.
You have to spend it in account.
Yeah, how about that?
Great.
And then on our services side, in fiscal year 17, we had 23 children receiving adoption assistance. We currently have 22 children in foster care. We have 179 valid CPS referrals that we investigated. This was a 30% increase from fiscal year 16, which was a 30% increase from fiscal year 15. We did 69 adult protective services investigations, and 83 adults received pre-screenings from our agency and health department. And so for fiscal year 19, we are asking for a new position as a full-time family services supervisor. And the reason for this request is threefold. One, it would help us. Right now we have two units, and I have another slide that I'll show you for that. And one unit includes foster care, adoption, adult protective services, and adult services. And we would like to separate out the programs that serve adults and our child welfare programs. And we, with the increases in our caseload, we are going to need additional workers, but we can't add additional workers unless we have a supervisor. The two supervisors that we have currently are extended to the max. They are working cases and trying to supervise. And then the state and the feds are always adding extra mandates that are placed on workers and supervisors. And one of the biggest extra mandates that our supervisors are facing right now is the state requires that we have what's called family partnership meetings. And these are meetings that are led by an objective facilitator at certain critical decision points in cases. If a CPS investigation comes back high risk for future abuse or neglect, a child's at risk for coming into foster care, a child in foster care needs to change placement, or we're at the point in the case of a foster care case that we need to change the child's goal, we're required to have family partnership meetings. And they can last 3 or 4 hours, and the supervisors are required to participate in all of those meetings. So a big bulk of their time not only is in family partnership meetings, but they're also carrying cases and they're trying to train new staff. And so the cost of this position would be $64,000. Of course, with the federal match, we're looking at $42,821 from the locality. But I do want to mention that when we met with the county administrator and finance staff in December, when we were looking through our budget, we made some reductions to public assistance and purchase of services to try to be consistent with our past year's spending. And so we actually cut $59,138 in public assistance and purchase of services, which reduces our bottom line budget. This is our current organizational chart for our services unit. Karen Abair supervises foster care, adoption, adult protective services, adult services, and co-order services like home studies. And then Kirby Vaughn, who is here, supervises CPS, CPS ongoing, foster care, prevention, view, and child care. And because of the crisis-oriented nature of CPS, she really just needs to be supervising CPS. And then our child care programs and our VIEW programs sort of get put on the back burner, and they really need more attention at this point. With the new position, that will be our proposed organizational chart. We would look at Karen having APS, Adult Services, VIEW, and Child Care, because those are the programs that serve the adult population. Kirby Bond would be responsible for Child Protective Services, Child Protective Services ongoing cases. And then our new supervisor could supervise foster care adoption, foster care prevention. And so this is our children in foster care. And if you look, since March of 2015, in 3 years, our caseload has increased from 2 to 22. According to the state, a caseload for one foster care worker is 10 children. So we have had to add extra staff. And what we've done that internally. We did have a full-time intake worker because that is a full-time job. We moved that person to foster care. And now all of our staff has to rotate intake duties. So everyone's had to take on extra responsibilities on top of everything else they're already doing. If our caseload continues to rise at the level that it has over the last 3 years, we are going to need additional staff.
Is a placement process, I mean, does the caseload continue after the children are placed? Or is there a regular consistency to it, or is it heavy up front and then kind of dies down? So, in other words, is the growth really impacting the caseload? But once it's kind of all settled down, the caseload sort of drops?
It's definitely busiest when children first come into foster care because we have to secure placements and there's a lot of paperwork up front. But foster care is driven by federal mandates, and we are mandated to go over and beyond to make every effort to reunite. So if the goal is to return home, then it doesn't really die down. We're working very hard. We're doing home visits with the child. We're doing home visits with the parents. We're setting up services. We're monitoring services. We're talking with the GAL. We're having family partnership meetings. We're having team meetings every month. The court's reviewing these cases every 3 months. And so, and also with foster care, I will say when our caseload goes up like that, I'm not saying that we just need additional staff to work those foster care cases, but the cost of our legal expenses go up. We have an agency attorney that represents us in court, and every foster care case has to be reviewed at least every 3 to 4 months. So when our caseload goes up that much, we're in court a lot more, we're paying our attorney more, and we're going to need probably more funds in the future for our attorney. And in December, the state came and did a review of our child welfare program at Fluvanna. They looked at our cases, they looked at our processes and procedures, and they advised us that we really need a foster home recruiter. What happens when our caseload goes up that high and we don't have our own approved foster homes in the county, then we have to look to using private child placing agencies. And the two problems with that is, one, it costs more to CSA. And the second problem is there's no guarantee our kids are going to be kept in Fluvanna. They often have to move, and it's very detrimental to kids, not only to be removed from their homes, but then having to be placed somewhere else.
Yes. Tell me if I get too specific. Mm-hmm. That's probably what happened. One day we had somebody show up and they literally picked two kids up from school and said, we're going to a new house. That would be the type. Okay.
And then when children are being upheaved like that, it's best to keep as much stability as possible. So we want to keep them in their same school system. But then if we're having to use child placing agencies, then oftentimes the children have to be placed outside of the county. So in the future, we really are going to have to step up. We don't have the staff to do it now to really commit to doing foster home recruitment and retention of foster homes, but at some point, we really are going to have to look at that. Our valid CPS referrals in fiscal year 15, it was a little over 100. It increased by 30% in fiscal year 16 to almost 140, and another 30% in fiscal year 17 up to 179. So from fiscal year 15 to fiscal year 17, that's a 70% increase in the number of CPSs that we're doing. And with CPSs, again, we go to court more. That affects our legal expenses. and staffing is an issue. And so I have Sergeant Aaron Hurd and Kirby Bond here because I know during the nonprofits, and we typically don't do this, but I know Foothills Child Advocacy Center presented to you and asked for $10,000, and that's the first time they've asked this board for money. And we very much support Foothills and what they do and their request. So Sergeant Hurd and Curry is going to talk a little bit more about what Foothills does for Fluvanna County.
Thank you, guys. So just to explain a little bit about Foothills is our child advocacy center that is actually the main building is in Charlottesville. However, they have satellite offices, and that's something that they've just started doing in the past 2 years in surrounding localities. So Greene, Madison, Buckingham, Fluvanna, Nelson. I think that's all of them. And just a little bit about kind of what we're doing in Fluvanna that I'm not sure you guys are aware is that we have a multidisciplinary team that consists of the Sheriff's Office, Social Services, the Commonwealth Attorney's Office, Region 10, the schools, UVA, St. Mary's. We all meet monthly to discuss cases that are severe physical abuse, sexual abuse, anything that meets kind of the criminal criteria. So we meet monthly, and a part of that team is having the Child Advocacy Center present for that. They are essential in what we're doing because, if you see, we all have different roles. Law enforcement, of course, is working to see if there's any type of criminal act done, and social services and child protective services about the child's safety, and so making those immediate steps for safety. Then you have the Child Advocacy Center, which is kind of in the middle, and allows us, so while the physical building is in Charlottesville, I believe Kathy Phillips talked with you about how there's a satellite office at Social Services right now. With grant funding, they actually provided us with state-of-the-art recording equipment this past year, and so we have an interview room there available, and they provide us a forensic interviewer that will actually, that's specifically trained in talking with children, that comes out to Fluvanna. We have the protective caregiver and the child come out there. We are able to, for example, when a call comes in, if a call came into social services that a child had been sexually abused, I would immediately contact Investigator Hurd. We would coordinate our response with Foothills and having my, a CPS worker, an investigator, come to the office. The forensic interviewer would be there. And they also offer a family support person that comes out to the office as well. We all meet with that protective caregiver. Then we interview the child. Law enforcement and CPS observes from another room and while the forensic interviewer does the interview. And then the family support person is able to offer support to the family. They go over trauma checklists with the protective parent. They go over any needs or services of the family and the child. And a lot of times, parents are more likely to open up to that neutral third party than they would be to CPS or to the sheriff's office. So they're able to offer that support while we're watching the interview, while someone who is trained to talk to kids is sitting in the room doing the actual interview. After the interview's done, we all sit together with the parent and discuss what our next steps are going to be. As you can see, the child abuse system used to be where a child would be at school and they made a disclosure. Well, then they would talk to their teacher, and then they would talk to the principal and maybe the guidance counselor before it actually got called to social services. And then they would tell their story to a social worker, and then they would tell their story to a police officer. And then they would maybe have to go to the hospital and tell their story to a nurse and then a doctor. And so a child was repeatedly having to tell their story over and over and over again. But with this system, a child is, making a disclosure at school, and we do training, and Foothills also assists us in doing outreach training to not only the sheriff's office, but also community partners like the schools. We're actually going to do a group effort training at Fort Union Military Academy next month on minimal facts interviews, which is just getting the need to know information so that we can make a decision about getting that child to one place to tell their story one time, which increases their ability to deal with the trauma that they're already going through. It offers support to a protective caregiver. It allows us to be thoughtful in our safety of children, and make an appropriate response plan for that child. I'll also say that Foothills, while they do offer us a forensic interviewer that's trained, they do also offer training to us as staff and social services and the sheriff's office. A lot of times that training is free, and it's really great training that we wouldn't otherwise get without being a part of the Child Advocacy Center. And lots of us are trained as forensic interviewers. I'm trained, I believe. I'm not sure if you're trained, not trained. But having someone whose full-time job is forensic interviewing makes a difference in having that service offered. And it is amazing that we have that service offered to us in Fluvanna. So I know I just spit a lot of information out, but I just wanted to be clear about what our processes are and how important it is.
One of the things you all are very in touch with your constituents and where you live and work and play and everything else here in the county. Where we see that this is so important is that this is where people live. So these kinds of offenses, we don't have a lot of commercial buildings getting broken into because they're not 10,000 homes, they're not 10,000 commercial buildings, right? So this is what we see, and this is, I just had a conversation with the sheriff just a little while ago. We could literally staff 3 full-time people that do nothing but child cases and the follow-up. And so when we look at that and we have to come back and go, we rely on social services to help us, but we rely very heavily on Foothills. You don't always want a cop talking to an 8-year-old kid. Sometimes it's fine, but you don't always want that, whether they're trained or not trained. And so Foothills gives us a huge benefit there for somebody who is well-trained, well-experienced, peer-reviewed, things that we just can't do. We do good in a pinch. We're well-trained to do good in a pinch. But that shouldn't be the quality of service that we provide to the people that live here, right? The people that we're trying to serve. We should be trying to give them the best possible service. And that's not to say that any of the people that are certified in my office or in social services are not good providers, but there is a difference when you're talking about these kids. Even just tonight, we have CPS out with a kid, with a family in crisis. I've got an investigator that's staying late at the office working a CPS case, and trying to get a resolution before he goes home for the night. We deal with this on a daily basis, and having a partner like Foothills relieves so much time and effort. Their ability to come out here, they're providing their services directly to your constituents and to the people that we serve, where they're most comfortable. Nobody's comfortable with social services except people who work there. I'm not. But that's a lot more convenient, and that's a lot more comfortable for a family who's in horrible crisis than uprooting, picking the kids up early from school, driving them to Charlottesville, going to a strange place, talking to people, coming back, still probably having to come to social services or come to the sheriff's office. We're doing it all in one place, and what they have provided us. And then the other thing that they give us is they give us a lot of experience. We've done an MDT in this county in some form or fashion for a long time. But they have helped us significantly in streamlining that and making that process truly functional. The Commonwealth's Attorney partners with us, Foothills, the hospital, social services, us. But those cases they're so time sensitive. They are so one little thing can cause a child abuse case to just completely go off the rails and not have a good resolution. And so it's important that we have these folks partnered with us. The numbers that Ms. Phillips gave us, we Fluvanna soaks up a little over 50% of that previously grant-funded position that they're asking us to contribute to. And while they're not even asking us to contribute that entire 50%, that $10,000 is a huge investment in the class of citizens in the county that are the most helpless, right? We you know, adults, a lot of times we can figure out a way to fend for ourselves, but these kids can't. And they really need your support to make sure that they can get access to those resources. So that's why we're here.
Yes.
Thank you very much.
I just wanted to reiterate that of all the time that Foothills gives to all of the counties, over 50% is spent here.
Yes.
Well, their satellite program that consists of six counties. We are taking up 55% of their that time.
That doesn't account for, I guess part of that too, is that doesn't account for the full-time staff that's at Foothills. I had a deputy there most of the day today. They did three interviews at their facility at Charlottesville because that was, I think, more convenient or was the available place. And that's not part of that 50%. That 50% is just the salary for Ashley.
Kevin Wells did a great job last time. I still remember him talking about it. He said we were the only ones that actually had a interview room to begin with, and that was one of the reasons that 50% of the time was spent here is because we were the only ones that had the facility to do it. And thank y'all for having the foresight to do that.
They've invested, I think it was ended up being about $5,000 out of their own grant purchases to update the recording. The idea is one interview. The kid has to talk to some, has to in-depth talk to somebody one time. And it doesn't always work, but when it does, that impact to a 5-year-old, a 10-year-old, a 15-year-old who's been sexually assaulted or physically assaulted or just long-term systemic abuse is huge. Not having to, you can think if you've ever had a crisis and you had to tell this person and you had to tell that person, all these strangers talking to these kids, they just do a great job.
Children are every time they have to tell their story, they're being traumatized. And the thing about Foothills is because, our staff is trained in doing forensic interviews, but they do a lot more than just forensic interviews. And with Foothills, that's all they do, so they're very skilled in it. And we use them a lot more since they started coming out to Flavanna. A couple of years ago, we had to go to Charlottesville. Some families just said, we don't want it. We'll come to your office, but we're not going to Charlottesville. So once they were able to get the BOCA grant, they started coming out to Flavanna. We've been able to use them a whole lot more. And it makes a big difference in the outcomes of our investigations.
Kim, did we ever hire a service person? I know you had that position that helped the social workers with their timelines and paperwork. Remember we talked about that one? Did we hire someone?
The HSA.
Right. Is that helping? Is that?
We had a hard time hiring the position, and we actually had to re-advertise it. Mm-hmm. So we have interviews scheduled next week.
Okay, so that person will be good. That's good. Okay.
Any questions?
One note, Ms. May, back on your slides. It seems a little counterintuitive to the way crime and service needs and things happen. When the economy is really down, there's a lot more needs and people flock in. And it seems to be almost just the opposite now. It was down lower before, and now it's rising back up, but the economy is getting better. How come such a difference now? I mean, is it because there's more programs or what?
A lot of it has to do with our policy that is driven by the feds, and they tell the state, and then it trickles down to us. So 2 years ago, a CPS policy changed. Used to, if a child was in a domestic violence situation, we would only investigate if that child was injured. For example, if a mother was holding an infant, dad hits mom, child gets injured. But that policy changed to say now any child who witnesses domestic violence, we have to investigate. And then in fiscal year 2017, they changed the policy and law. And laws drive policy. It changed again
Before, just because a child's born substance exposed didn't necessarily mean we could investigate. And so the policy changed to make it easier for us now to investigate substance exposed infants. And we see a lot of those.
So I'm wondering if those numbers, if that trend right there, because of the changes, is the same, I hate to say across the board, but in other surrounding counties.
Yeah.
If you could find that out, that would be interesting.
Well, I do know that it has increased in other localities, and I know, for instance, Albemarle County used the change in policy for this year with substance-exposed infants because not only does it make it easier for us to accept those referrals and get involved with that family, but we're required to see that child within 24 hours. So we have to lay eyes on that kid within 24 hours, and so they actually use the change of policy to get a new CPS position. So the numbers are increasing significantly because the policy changed, because not only are we going to accept all those referrals, that even means a mother who was prescribed medications during her pregnancy that are illegal or could cause the child to be in withdrawal. For instance, if a mother is prescribed opiates or methadone during her pregnancy legally, the child is impacted by that because a lot of times those babies are born and have to be on a methadone taper. So we still have to investigate that, whereas before the policy allowed us, if a parent was taking those medications as part of treatment, we wouldn't have to get involved. But it's all driven by, like Kim said, the trickle-down effect from the feds, but also the state has been having child fatality reviews regularly, and a lot of the changes in our policy is also driven because the statistics show that children who are born with some type of substance in their system, those are the kids that are dying. Those are the most vulnerable. And so that's why we are having to get out there. We're having to intervene from the beginning.
So does that mean we have more drug abuse in this county?
I would say our numbers, that's why the numbers have
right.
increased.
Right, yeah. Because most of the time, it's a drug situation attached to those children that have trauma.
Pretty much, one feeds off the other. You have parents that are addicted to drugs and not taking care of the kids.
Right.
So then the schools and DSS have to pick up the load, and the only hope some of the younger kids have is one of these two resources. Mm-hmm. They're not getting that at home.
Right.
And drugs are prevalent everywhere, and I think an uptick in that, maybe not as much economy-driven as what you're seeing out in the community. A lot of drug use, a lot of methadone, a lot of things.
Legally prescribed opiates, and that's where a lot of our problem is coming from, is that people are getting these prescription medications legally, and it's essentially legal heroin.
Yeah.
Which is also another point to Foothill's credit. The family services that they provide the citizens, it's not going to help the chronic opiate addicted, heroin addict. If they get a counseling session from Foothills, they're probably not going to see the error of their ways and jump up and fix everything. But all of those fringe families that maybe made a mistake or maybe don't understand things like the family services that Foothills can put them in connection with and in contact with, those are the things that's not my expertise. And I would say it's probably not always social services expertise, but Foothills has all of those services, and they bring it all under one umbrella, and they directly reach into the families as a complete, impartial, assisting group, and they really do make a difference.
And I would also say that a lot of times families that we serve are transient amongst Charlottesville, Albemarle,
right.
surrounding counties, and Foothills serves all of those communities. So if we're at an MDT meeting and we're bringing up a family, for instance, we recently had a case involving three children, Foothills had direct knowledge of information from this mother 10 years ago that, we would have never had Foothills not been sitting at the table. So it's just a lot of support and information being offered to serve immediately, but also to help us in our prevention efforts.
So, I know that this is Foothill's first time ask, and I guess the real question is, if there's a wonderful job by a lot of departments advocating for them, is their ask appropriate for the level of services that they provide at this point in time? Are they asking too little? Are they asking too much?
I personally think that we are utilizing the most of their time to these surrounding localities, and I think the fact that I think it's very humble of them to come in and ask for not the full amount of what they need from us, but just a portion of that when we're taking up most of that time, and our citizens and our kids are the ones who are using that. And I just don't think there's a price that you can put on, you know, reducing the trauma to a child who's already gone through something that some of us, you know, can't even imagine. Mm-hmm. So I would say too little, but I'm also on a soapbox, so.
No, say it not so, Kirby.
So on this slide, you said the driver here is largely Medicaid, mm-hmm. but again, that seems to be slightly counterintuitive when the economy is changing and stuff. Were there other rule changes that made it easier to get Medicaid or SNAP or TANF?
Well, I think a couple of things happened. A few years ago, DMAS, the Department of National Assistance Services in Virginia, which is basically Medicaid, we just determined the eligibility. They said, oh, guess what, social services, you're going to start, we determine eligibility for FAMIS, but you're going to start determining eligibility for FAMIS too. So we started picking up FAMIS applications as well. And then when the Affordable Health Care Act came out, what was happening is people were applying for health insurance under the Affordable Care Act, and it would come back and would say, oh, you're eligible for Medicaid, so you need to apply for Medicaid. And so some of those people were, in fact, eligible for Medicaid, but the issue is DMAS in Virginia, DMAS determines the eligibility criteria for Medicaid, and Virginia has one of the strictest eligibility requirements in the nation. So Virginia is probably one of the hardest states to be eligible for Medicaid. And so although a lot of folks weren't eligible for Medicaid here, where they might be in another state, we still have to process those applications.
And what about increase in, I mean, have you seen a steady increase in claims by seniors or not?
Yeah, I think so. We have two workers that just do what's called long-term care Medicaid, and that's for your elderly who need nursing home placements or aid services in the home.
You all do a magnificent job.
Nope.
Ms. Eager, magnificent.
Good. Yeah. All righty. Thank y'all so much.
So on their budget on that the top line, that's at 64,881. That's the full cost. Our share would be 42 out of that, but there was significant savings down below in some of the other areas that would cover that new cost if you wanted it to go that way. That's one of the personnel positions that's listed on the master sheet in your binders that we'll have to go through.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Ms. Hoffman, the library.
Good evening.
Good evening.
And just a quick overview of the library. Our circulation, we circulated 226,000 plus books this year. Almost 8,000 of that was ebooks, downloading audios and streaming videos, which is kind of cool. That keeps rising. And just a quick note, we just added a whole bunch of picture books that do sign language. So they're streaming picture books that you can watch a sign language interpreter read. Our collection is growing, our active borrowers is growing, and our internet users, especially the Wi-Fi use, is growing. I know I left my car for a meeting and came back to get it at like 10:30 the other night, and there was four cars out there using the Wi-Fi.
Wow.
So it works 24/7. So. And our summer reading this year, we had a pretty good increase. We had about 800 kids and teens, and they read over 8,000 books. So, as well as other programs, we have lots of other programs that reached almost 23,000 people.
And the Rosetta Stone, so people can come check out the Rosetta Stone. Like
it's actually
language?
Online.
Online, okay.
You
great.
Can get it on your smartphone, your iPads, your laptops, computers. So we currently have level one.
That's all I need.
And in the new budget request that was recommended, we've asked for the additional level. And that has 30 different languages.
I have one of those levels. That's because I don't know words.
For funding and library stated, we're in our five-year agreement with the state, which is we need to reach $300,307 by 2020. And it's all based on a per capita. So when we started, we were the lowest funded library in the state at $7, and now we're at $12.66 per capita. So, yay, us. We're still only 84 out of 92 libraries in the entire state, though, in local funding. So I'd still like to see it move up just a little bit.
Seems odd that there's only 92 libraries and there's 95 counties.
Regionals.
Oh.
Regional systems. It used to be 91 libraries, but two libraries decided they couldn't get along and split. revenues last year, we actually went up by like $1,100. So we brought in $11,500 in revenue, which is really good when it's 10 cents a piece. So.
That was probably the ones I brought back.
Yeah. and not only is our support locally going up, but when I came here, we were at $49,000 a year in state aid, and estimated for FY19 is $80,544. So it's helping. So our total budget request is, I believe it's $381,136, which includes the state aid, so local funding request. Any questions about the library?
Have you ever heard of a little kid called Low Pass Boy?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. It's me.
In fact, I gave it to my niece and nephew. I gave it to my niece and nephew.
Yeah.
This year.
Uh-huh.
It's cute. It is. This year's summer theme is music, mm-hmm. and then the winter theme is travel. So we're going to do our own take on that.
Yeah.
The Low Pass Boy.
Okay.
For travel for winter next year.
Mm-hmm. Say, Mr. Nichols is a couple, about a week late on learning that Spanish, so you can go down.
I practice a lot. My wife was impressed.
So. Your request there is about $600 less than what's on the budget sheet.
There was a change in state aid.
There was an increase in state aid, okay. Which offsets
that. We just got updated estimates on that. So.
It's a good thing.
No, I know. That's a nice thing. It's a bad
yeah,
thing.
Don't complain.
Not complain, but... Fair to point out the state.
Now, Mr. Weaver, smiling.
Good and bad. Thank you so much. And last but not least would be the registrar, Mr. Joyce Pace.
Not here.
Nobody speaking? Okay. Sounds like that's a winner right there.
Their budget didn't change much.
Right.
They're pretty flat from last year. The $5,000 increase, but that's largely salaries and a little minor things.
I didn't notice a line for Russian counter surveillance in there.
Yeah.
So the
fake news.
Unlisted.
Just a reminder, and Ms. Twisdale reminds me of this about three times a day, and it's a good reminder for all of you. You have to set an advertised tax rate 2 weeks from tonight. And so you don't have lots of time left to start talking budget. So if you want to talk budget a little bit now and give us some directions and stuff, we can do that. Next week on your regular meeting, you've got a regular 4 o'clock meeting, and then your 7 o'clock work session, budget work session, is with Parks and Rec and Public Works, but you're definitely going to need to talk some budget stuff that night too, because the following week, which is a regular budget work session, you'll have to set the tax rate that night because we have to advertise before the public hearings. So you have to set the maximum advertised tax rate on the 14th of March. So you got tonight, next Wednesday, and the following Wednesday, and that following Wednesday you have to set it. So you got about 3 or 4 hours to figure all this out. Now, it doesn't mean that's where you're going to end up. But that's
right. Your this is just the maximum.
Right.
This is the one where we just kind of put a number there and say, okay.
Yeah, just
we're not going to go
over a little flexibility, but you're not going to, I don't think you're going to set it at $1.10 or anything like that. So.
You never know. I was thinking about that.
Have there been any substantial changes to the budget numbers?
Yeah, let's go through the BS budget balance worksheet. I'll show you just up on the screen. Aaron, did you, the $5,000, did you actually put it in and take it off?
It's
yeah, what did that change? So this is really the master that you need to work off of, this budget balance worksheet. And what it shows is what the tax rates and dollar values are for my proposed budget. And down below, anything that was not funded in my budget is listed there in red. So things that have changed since I first proposed the budget, they're still over there, but things that have changed are in the right-hand column. And so you can see down through here, we put in $15,000 for additional cost recovery revenue.
That's a net wash, though, because we change, that's we recognize right. expenses and revenues a little differently. So there's 15 additional revenue, 15 additional expense. So it's a net.
And then the core maintenance cost, we're going to share our radio system core with Louisa County. We're getting ready to finalize that agreement between us. Then it'll come to both boards for everyone to chop. But that includes $385,000 to pay for half of the core. That's cash that will go to fund balance. But it also includes their share of the maintenance for the core. So next year, for fiscal year 19, they would be contributing $78,012 towards our maintenance costs for the core. So we've attributed that in there. But there are some other items on here, too, that are things that changed. The increase in reassessment costs, that was a hit, but it has to be on there. It wasn't in mine because we didn't know at the time. The new salary above the co-ed budget, that was one salary higher that we did that wasn't in the budget because we had a gap in there. We were trying to figure out what it was going to come in at, and when the new person got hired, came in a little higher than what we had put in the budget. There's the expense for the revenue on that $15,000 for cost recovery. This one was also one that was budgeted in my budget that ended up being higher. And that's not the norm. The vast majority of our hires are lower than the previous.
Well, we just in the co-ed's proposed budget, we had put lower figures in there in the budget documents.
Dropped, yeah. We had dropped that position, and that also includes fringes, right?
Yes.
What?
Fringes are in yes, the figure. Yeah. So that's not the actual salary, the fringes in it.
No, that's salary and fringe.
Yeah.
Everything. This one was when they hired the new...
That's
promotion for the victim witness coordinator that he presented.
That's right. That's,
mm-hmm. And so that's there.
And that's fringes, too. Yeah.
This VFW tower. The VFW tower... We've had multiple meetings about this, but the VFW tower has our equipment on it. They built the tower. NCT built the tower, and it's at the VFW site. We put our equipment on it. Between the drawing of what was going to go on there and the way Motorola actually installed it, it's off by 3 feet. Mm-hmm. Is it 3 feet?
Yeah.
So it's off by 3 feet. So that means NCT loses one slot because you need 10 feet between different types of antennas. Nominally, you need 10 feet. Well, they don't have 10 feet because we took up 3 feet more. Because the way they aligned our equipment on the tower, it took up 3 feet more than it should have. There is clearly a plan that can just move that back down and realign it and put it back on there. That our lease costs are, what was it, $1,800 per month?
It went up $100 a month.
Wasn't it about $18,000 a year?
It was $18,000 a year.
Yeah, $18,000 a year.
Yeah,
about $18,000. Right. But they're going to go up $400 a month on that, so it'll be another $5,000 a year if we took away that site for them. Well, we're working with Motorola now to have them adjust those antennas so it doesn't affect the system, but it takes away those 3 feet. So that may be $3,000 or $4,000 or $5,000 or $8,000. I don't know what it's going to cost to move antennas on a 250-foot tower. But if that doesn't happen this year, or if that doesn't happen for some technical reason, this $5,000 is there because that's the cost in the increased rent.
That would be the ongoing annual amount. So we either have to maybe pay a little money up front to move them once, or we're going to have this additional $5,000.
So we have this there as a placeholder only, and we're not expecting to use it because we want to move the equipment and realign it on there. But it's technically complex, and we had a meeting with one of our consultants and with the sheriff's office and Motorola, and we just need to get it resolved with NCT. So.
Well, I mean, didn't you just say?
No, yeah.
How much extra is it going to cost for you to make this change?
I honestly have no idea.
Okay.
Because we've gotten the specifications of what can be changed and how it can be changed now. But now Motorola's got to cost it out for us.
But not only,
in my head, I'm saying $5,000 or $10,000.
But not only that, we're,
I don't know.
We're also determining that was someone at fault, and
yeah, that someone put something where they didn't do it. Well, right. We've been trying to track this backtrack at 57 ways to Sunday, that to know. Okay, Motorola, they told you had to be here. Why did you put it there?
And to fix it, it would be us paying for it.
We're hoping that's what it's going to be. Yeah. But at worst case, I want to always go in the worst case. I'm thinking $5,000 or $10,000 to move stuff around. If that didn't happen, if they couldn't move it technically for some reason, if it had to stay where it was, then this cost would be realized that $4,800 a year. No, that's just there for a placeholder. So, and then this is the balance off of the school funding from above. And all of that came up to a net increase, a net available balance for you of 25K. So right now you're 25K to the good based on my budget and those changes. But remember, down the left-hand side in this yellow column, all this stuff are things that weren't funded in people's requests. Most prominent of which, there's no coverage for health benefits and there's no coverage for pay plans in any dollars at all. there's the VFW tower costs. That's the 10,000 I'm talking about. Say 5 or 10,000 is on that side. It's not funded over there, and we'll see where it ends up. And then the special studies from the board, that doesn't really need to be funded. You're going to fund it out of your contingency balance normally when you do special studies. But it used to be something you'd fund fairly regularly because you had special studies of somebody coming in and doing this or doing that or doing a review. I'm kind of tired of studies myself. Studied a lot of things for a lot of years. And, this was a decrease in the treasurer's budget, and she's agreed to that, so that doesn't need to move back over. This stuff is fairly substantive and critical stuff, but in an effort just to keep dollars down, this network infrastructure and tape library upgrades that Mr. Notman was asking for were pulled out of his budget, so we'll have to take a look at that. The HR assistant position is HR/county admin/community economic development/Jack or Jane of all trades to cover the position that we lost 2 years ago now, and we're just scrambling. When Kelly's gone, I'm the one who answers phones and greets people and does the work in the office. There is no cross coverage. If the HR manager is gone, then there is no cross coverage. Well, finance does a little bit of it. Now, I'm not advocating hard for this right now because there's so many budget pressures this year, but it's something we're going to have to really think about in the future because we can't keep working on a shoestring as the workload gets higher. Overtime in the circuit court budget, we cut it down just based on historical numbers, and I think they're okay, but and I think she said that the other night.
I think she agreed, yeah.
The two new deputies, that's only if he gets approved from the comp board is what the sheriff has said, and we would get some measure of funding that from the comp board.
You don't think so?
Yeah, okay. So, and then the fire and rescue, we cut ops down from what their request was and went to level funding from last year, the 274, the 130, and the 97.5 or whatever it was. And I'm not sure, we'll have to figure out what happened with Chief 10 or Chief 1, but it wasn't funded last year either. It wasn't in the line item. So, litter control program, we just cut down a little bit of 1800 because it was the wrong year or something. We moved it. Mm-hmm. The public works director, we cannot for sure keep adding to our engineers' workload by adding these water systems and projects and more stuff on it without actually upgrading his position. And it's really past due, but if you're going to expect him to manage a whole water project and, you know, our part of the JRWA and work on expanded billings and collections and all the stuff that he has to do, we're going to need to put some more dollars with that position. CSA, I think those are costs we can probably live without this year. Although the paperless drive that Mr. Moeller is trying to get rid of paper, it takes a little bit of cost and revenue to do that on the front end. But then it'll decrease the cost down the line. So we may want to move a little dollars back over that. We went $45,000 down on CSA purchase service operations. You know the story on CSA. It's going to be what it's going to be. I didn't want to cut it by 100 or 150 because we'd just end up having to pull it out of someplace else. Social services has that one new staff and some dollars for staff development, some increased dollars, so that's the two things that are not in there. Parks and Rec has personnel upgrades. We've been trying for years, like we did in Public Works, like we did in the Treasurer and Commissioner's Office, and in other areas where we had some ladder positions, so you had a grade 7, a grade 8, and a grade 9, so people, when somebody left, they could get promoted within our organization. In Parks and Rec, they're all at the lowest grade, and they're graded too low, but they're all, everyone are equally at the lowest grade, but they don't do, we don't want them to do equal work. We want somebody who's a little more senior, so you've got some ladder positions in there.
A large amount of that $90,000 was not the personnel.
No. The personnel was only $11,000 total. I mean, so of all the personnel program requests, the vast majority of the personnel program requests, well, they're on the personnel sheet that's farther out, but they're not terribly expensive. Some of them are just upgrades or changes or additions, but. And then ops, we just cut a bunch of stuff out of Parks and Rec ops. But remember, if you decided, it's just too expensive, we can't keep running all this stuff. If you cut the entire Parks and Recreation Department and did no services and no people, you're still not even talking 2 cents on the tax rate. And just think of the outcry you'd have from the community if you cut all Parks and Rec programs. County Planner, we just cut postage down a little bit. I think they're going to be good with that. This one's highlighted in red, this Go Virginia, because if the Go Virginia program through the state, that Central Virginia Partnership for Economic Development is kind of the lead agency for us here in Central Virginia with Region 9 and Region 10 planning districts, part of the requirements of the Go Virginia program, if they do a big project here in the local area and it gets approved, it requires buy-in from the counties. And so we've got a $25,000 wedge in the economic development budget, but it's not funded there. He also had a wedge in there for the Savannah Shovel Ready Site Program to put some money against it. While I understand his desire to strengthen that program, the same $35K that was there a few months ago, that you put there a few months ago is still there, hasn't been used yet, and it's supposed to be paid back. So I don't think it's time to necessarily put extra money against that unless we see really success from the program and you want the pot to be bigger and not be revolving. And the interstate signs, you said a couple of times before that maybe that's not something we're going to fund. I think it's $18,000.
That's the Pleasant Grove signs.
Yeah, the brown signs on the interstate, but it's in the budget, but it wasn't funded. Cooperative Extension, as Ms. Mayo told you, it's a part-time position. It's in her budget request. The nonprofit agencies, we cut them down from their request by $57K, and you can look at those individually to see. I don't recall if we did fund it. We did not fund Foothills, but you've heard the passionate outcry for that. I think that's one that one and the hospice one, both of them did fantastic presentations and surely make an impact, a positive impact in our community. So you might want to go back through the nonprofits and take a look at them.
Yeah, I think that should be added in. I mean, we just had that presentation.
Yeah. So, but
you have to. As we're going through these, we might as well say yay or nay on some of these, in my opinion. So.
Well, yeah, I can do that. Let me just run down to the finish here quick, and then we can definitely do that. The non-departmental actually was an increase, so it is a net gain. The schools asked for 2.7. Mr. Sherman and I can actually talk about what the real request is at the end of this, because we had a lengthy two-hour meeting yesterday morning with the schools and a couple of school board members. And then the CIP, lots of stuff is cut out of CIP. And while I'm empathetic for everybody's needs, I don't know how you're going to fund too much out of CIP this year other than kind of what was in my budget baseline. Because if you fund all this stuff, and most of these things are mandatory, you're going to be down to $1.4 million. Now, you will get, if the tax rate changes, you will get some extra revenue the second half of this fiscal year, from January to June, we'll go back in fund balance. You might have some carryover from the county and or the schools that would go back into fund balance. But, we don't want to get playing down to $600,000-$800,000.
The one thing, and this is going to sound bad because I know I'm a member, but right now I will talk about the engine. We are surviving because Paul Myers had a breakdown, and they've got our 27-year-old engine over there using it as their backup. And like most things are 27 years old, the more you use it, the more it's going to break on it. And then it becomes a cost of do we fix it or do we go ahead, since most every other one we've replaced at 20. This one's 27.
Yep. Yeah. And it's a $600,000 cost.
Hopefully
you could do on debt service at about 65K a year than used to be for those for 5 or 6 years.
Yeah, we could. I mean,
right, 7 years. Or just buy it out of cash, which is better. But I don't think you could do that and do all the other stuff that people are asking for. You're going to have to try to cherry pick off that. That ambulance, I don't think that ambulance is ready to be replaced. That's the Flint Rescue one.
Which one is it then?
It's
49.
That's 49.
49.
Yeah, it's been having some service issues.
It's 2011. I may have to do some maintenance on it, but I don't think you can. I don't think it's an essential one this year.
How many are you down to with Fluvanna right now?
There's
49,
3.
48.
They have three.
Okay. We got the two new ones.
This fast.
Three. We purchased two new ones a year and a half.
48 and 48, and is how old is 48 now? 48's not very old.
This one's 2011. That's the oldest replacement.
Okay. Well, I just that's my only thought.
Yeah,
I'm telling you, they've done a lot of work. Not myself, but the others have done a lot of work, and I don't think it's going to be $600,000.
That's good.
I think it's going to be. So, but they just need a yay or nay, because they've been traveling, setting it up, specking it out, and are we going to do it or are we not going to do it?
But it has to be contracted too.
Right. But I mean, they're trying to get to where we can come back and say, here's what we can do for $475,000, or with it fully equipped, $500,000.
Okay. So there's that one, and then. So that's CIP stuff down there. Now, let's go back and briefly talk about
schools. All right.
Forget the 2.7 number. The latest number you've heard was 991,000 is what their ask is. Forget that for a second. The real bottom line is what they want is they want $600,000 in new dollars for next year. They already get some new revenue from the state and feds and other local, which equates to about $600,000. $300,000 of it is targeted. They have to spend in a certain area. The other three is pretty unrestricted. So if they got $600,000 in new money with that $300,000 in new revenue, they could accomplish all of what they want to accomplish. Now, there are two ways to do that. Give them new money, if you decide to go that way, and or take the risk of knowing that they're going to have excess left at the end of this fiscal year. We won't know the bottom line numbers until September, October time frame. But the board could say, yep, we'll let you carry over up to $600,000 of carryover, because they're probably going to have.
They talked about it yesterday. It's anywhere from 400 to 800,
plus
possibly to 1.2.
Yeah.
It's anywhere from 400,000 to 1.2.
But
they could have left.
400,000 they've got set aside for this year to do bonuses before the end of the fiscal year. And that's a little concerning because of the bonuses, and then they want to do raises, then they want to do step increases, and then they want to hold harmless for health insurance. And all that in 1 year gets pretty expensive. But the bottom line number they're really looking for to accomplish the program is $600,000 in new money, whether it's through machinations or we let them carry some forward so it doesn't affect the tax rate for this year, because next year will be probably a better revenue year, or you put new money in there and find $600,000 worth of revenue.
The only downfall is if you fund it out of, whether you say you're going to do carryover or you fund it out of fund balance, it's a one-time thing.
Sure.
Something I talked about yesterday.
We'll meet it later.
Yeah, you're going to have to, the following year, the same $600,000 requirement is going to be there, because most of it's in salaries and personnel stuff. So you're going to have to build in the tax rate the following year, because you can't keep funding out of cash
on
a budget. But this is one of those unique years where revenues were a little lower than we had hoped. Next year will certainly be higher because of the reassessment and because of a couple of those things that are dynamics that are going on and possibly business personal property changes. So I do believe you'll have more revenue, and you're going to have a little bit extra revenue from this year in the second half. This may be the year you try that. Now, I've advocated against using cash since I've been here. We only did one time, and we used $42,000 one year to balance the budget at the last minute, and it was just done. I don't mind that, but it would be a way potentially to fund what they're asking for. So.
Now, something I talked about yesterday, this idea that just I started thinking about, and we've talked about this in the past. Somebody said something to me one day. We were sitting there. I don't even know where we were. We were talking. And he said, you know, every time I go to Charlottesville, every time I go to Louisa, and I buy a meal, or Richmond, I leave my tax money in Louisa, Charlottesville, and Richmond to pay for their budget. We've talked in the past about possibly doing a meals tax. And we talked about having... It's got to be a referendum, so it's not us making that decision. We just decide whether or not to put it out to let the county vote for it. I'd say if we did that, then we come back in and say, all right, the meals tax money will be used to help fund the school's budgets the following year. I think that would replace, if it were to pass, it would replace the $400,000 or whatever we would be putting in out of fund balance. Or not fund balance, but out of carryover money, Mr. Weaver. Do you have any thoughts on that, sir? I know you hate a new tax, but this is one.
I didn't have to think about it. We've talked about it several times in the past.
The thought process is,
I'd like to see what that would figure out to be.
That person made that great point to me.
People, $300,000 or $400,000?
$400,000 to $500,000, I think, is what Mr. Will Nichols and them have guessed that it's going to end up being.
I think more important is not just as $400,000 now, it's that as the economic development starts to take place, it's going to increase.
Well, hopefully, we get that corridor going up to 50, right, where we get more possible
there, then you could
lodging.
Yeah, it's almost a tonal fairness because it doesn't hurt the restaurants because every restaurant in Central Virginia has a meals tax except for ours. It is a collection issue, but. The revenues are a little nebulous. We think 4 to 6 when fully implemented at our current rate. But several things. A, I have asked Fred to put together kind of a fairly simple 1 or 2 pager that talks about the referendum requirements, the timeline, what the parameters are, whether the money can be targeted, because I'm not even sure how this board could obligate future boards. Right. And the timing, because if it's approved by referendum in November, I'm not sure when it goes into effect, whether it's January 1st or the following start of the fiscal year, or if there's some timeline by state code. So next week, Fred should have a report for all of you.
I think what we have learned from other areas who've done this, it has taken them a couple of years,
yes. And
you have to do the education with the public.
Yeah, you've got to have a rational rationale.
And they always have said that fast. They tie it to something.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That the people are passionate about.
Yeah. Emergency stuff, schools.
Whether it's emergency services, whether it's the school division.
Yeah.
It could be any of those things. But like I said, the person just looked at me and said, you know what, every time I go and my bill becomes 9 cents higher, a quarter higher, it's me leaving a quarter there. But when they come here and eat, they don't leave a quarter here to help us.
We went to Zion Crossroads for lunch. We're paying taxes to Louisa.
I think Charlottesville is almost, 8 cents or something like that?
Yeah, cities are different. We can only go to 5%. Cities have a different level of authority. Richmond's trying to go to 7.5 cents, I think. 7.5%. But then, what are some of the other revenue sources we've talked about before? The vehicle license fee we talked about several years ago. I'm not sure. I still don't have
license.
Rock solid answer from front of that. He thinks we can do one thing, the state code says another, and the other counties do a different thing. But we figured it out. Based on the numbers, we think it'd be about $140,000 in revenue. That'd be taking the $33 car license fee to the $38, which is allowed, the motorcycle from $18 to $23, which is allowed. But that's another revenue potential source. You lowered the business personal property tax. we really need to look hard, working with the commissioner's office, on encouraging him to look at the valuation of the business equipment, because right now we tax at 20% of the initial value for 10 years, and that's it. Almost everybody around us, if we have a big master graph and chart that shows you if you put in $1 million worth of equipment in our county and run it out for 10 years and cost it out, we're by far the lowest. If you run out for 20 years, we're catastrophically lowest. If you go out beyond that, I mean, because it's
just to do. I thought when we sort of implemented the lower tax there, that there was, I don't want to say an understood agreement, but it seemed to me that there were going to be adjustments made on that.
There were, and my understanding is that the commissioner is looking at potentially changing the 20% rate this year, and then potentially the following year changing the time frame. I would rather see it the other way around. I'd rather leave it 20% and run it out longer. Frankly, I'd rather do it like the other counties do, where you graduate, where you get started at, 25% and then for the first 3 years, and then 20%. Then it gets down to a bottom line of 10% and then stays there.
Well, there's even some localities that they only even have like a 70% the first year. Like they'll 70, start off at like 70, 50. 65, 60, and keep on going.
Most and then go down to 10 and then stop at 10, but carry it out for the life of the equipment. The other thing that I really, Mr. Sheridan and I have talked about this, but I think it's kind of silly for us to be taxing a $100 piece of equipment right now. So
we talked about that last year, going up to $500.
No, $250 or $500. I mean, you buy a drill nowadays, of a decent quality drill, it's $120 or whatever. A typewriter. I guess we don't want a typewriter. But I mean, anything little that's a piece of office equipment, why are we worrying about that kind of stuff?
Fax machine.
It would be much easier for businesses to have a $250 limit instead of $100. Or a $500 limit. But when you do that, that decreases the revenue for us. But you could do it in the same time as changing the length of time on the taxation of the equipment. If you're going down to 290 this year, or 240, going down to 240 and you want to go down to 190 next year, you can't keep letting the revenue go away. I know we're trying to attract business, but we don't want to be unreasonably low. And right now, we're unreasonably low on those rates, so much lower than others, that it's a good story. But
can we have the Commissioner of Revenue come talk to us so that we can see why is there a rationale for not doing something different to bring in more revenue?
I think he'd be willing to do that, and I think he would be appreciative of strong board support on whichever direction he's planning on going.
Sure.
Because the problem is, he knows I think this is silly. I'm not sure why the Commonwealth of Virginia says the Commissioner of Revenue sets those rates when you've got an elected board here. I mean, he's an elected official too, but you'd think that would be a taxing thing, and the elected commissioner would be the enforcement. But you don't have the authority to do that, the Commissioner of Revenue does, but having support from the Board of Supervisors on which direction we're going and some incremental changes so that we can tie it with the tax rate coming down on business personal property, adjusting this, taking the timeline out, so where you can get it to where we're not leaking off dollars every year.
How much do we collect in business personal property?
It's not very much. The main sheet, go to the main page.
Yeah, it's a couple million dollars.
The 1.8 million or something like that.
But you think about...
It's only 192,000.
I was thinking, public utilities stuff.
So,
and it's going to go down. I mean, this is down from last year because the tax rate's lowered again. So, and if you go down to 190, it's going to get lower, lower still. But again, the big cost for that tax is not the rate. It's how long you carry it out.
Because you got people using equipment for 30 years.
Well, it's the depreciation percentage.
A bulldozer. So.
And that wouldn't necessarily. I think this is across all counties. Actual enforcement of, to say don't tax items under 100 is one thing, but the actual enforcement of that is pretty weak to begin with across the lower.
Yes.
Six people. Five people in the office.
No, I'm not being critical of their office. If you hire another person for the commissioner's office,
one person wouldn't do that.
No, but I think if you hire another person, you could expand a whole variety of things. But that's, again,
that's a business audit.
You've got to do an audit. You've got to do a
business audit. It's got to be a good discussion with the commissioner on how to set that up and how to implement it. And frankly, we've been scratching out the edges of it for the last 4 years talking about it.
Yeah, and I think it's time for us to get something
figured out.
I would support an auditor position for sure.
Yeah.
If it's going to help.
I mean, yeah, that's
Eric, where's
it's going to help.
That has,
bring in the revenue.
Business partial property chart. Is it in the special report?
And will you have different scenarios of what you're proposing?
Yes, ma'am.
Does anybody have Snicker bars in their jar?
There's a Milky Way.
No, ma'am.
Milky Way?
There's a Milky Way. There's probably.
I
have
okay, yes, we do have Snicker bars.
You want a kitty cat?
They've been renamed Snicker Doodles.
You want a kitty cat?
No, I don't like kittens. I'm all right. Kid. Thank you.
So,
thank
and you, so I'm not sure what other revenue
thank
sources
you, Mary.
Are.
Oh, that's fine.
This is personal property assessment. Percentage and time. There were several other things we talked about when we did this big revenue review 2 years ago. Most of them we really didn't get. So here's an example. So you've got $1 million in business personal property, and at our current rate of 290, not the new rate of 240, the current rate of 290, if you look at these counties surrounding us,
mm-hmm.
after 10 years, our county, they paid $58,000. Other counties have all paid way more than that.
Yeah.
By the way, ours stops there.
Just look at year one. I mean, you could tell that their percentage, something where it's very different.
Yeah.
Well, they're a dollar cheaper than us at the rate, but they're paying almost three times the amount.
Yep. And M&T, you can see.
They're assessing at at 60% where we're doing the 20%.
Their M&T in Almar is 428. They're getting $65K after 10 years out of machinery and tools. But anyway, it's pretty dramatic. We can put in any numbers in there and model this, but if you just run our percentages out, even if you stayed at 20% and ran it out for the life of the equipment, or at year 11 went to 10% for the life of the equipment, or had some graduate thing, you could do it. We have another big master chart that shows all the actual rates by year and everything for all the different counties.
I think it's interesting that Louise is actually the second highest there.
Yeah, and
higher than Charlottesville.
Where the business personal property is? No. It's not low if you actually figure out what you have to pay over.
The rate's low, but the percentage is
high. Yeah. So it's an elevator conversation, but it's hard to do an elevator conversation when your tax rate's 290 or 435, and theirs is 190. Well, I'm going to save money going there. No, sorry. Even at 435, they wouldn't have saved money.
I mean, well, look, Albemarle and Charlottesville, 428 and 420, right. And they're both taking in $4,000 less. Mm-hmm.
So anyway, there's some meat on those bones, and we don't want to hammer business at the exclusion of all others, but I can tell you my belief is for too long, the Nevada counties just ignored anything from the business side from a dollar point of view, even though there isn't much here yet. As it grows, we're going to need to rely on them for a larger share of the income so you don't have to take it just from residents on their homes. So, anyway.
And bitterly complained about having to continue to raise the real estate tax.
I didn't say that. So meals tax, I think Fred will have the document for us next week, and it'll tell us kind of the whole story. The vehicle license fee we can look at, I'll have to revisit those numbers. The assessment time, I think it would be great to have the commissioner come maybe even next week or the week after one of your work sessions to sit down and talk about that and see what the possibilities are. And then if there are any other revenue things, we'll pull up our old documents before.
Business license fee?
Which one?
Business license fee?
Oh, yeah, I don't want to say that one out loud again. Fee or no fee, we ought to have a business license requirement. We have no requirement whatsoever. So Mr. Sheridan's office does a good job of identifying business. They read the paper, they watch documentation, they see new signs up, Our staff finds the stuff. We notify them of that. But it's hard for us to market to and about our businesses without actually having, you know, as perfect the numbers can be. And every list you look at is different. The commissioner's office is probably the best one, but it's hard to keep that kind of stuff up. And I know some of you think that's a slippery slope to people. I'm not advocating or interested in people in any shape or form. Mm-hmm. I'm much more interested in adjusting this. That's the business tax we want. That's not regressing like a B-poll is. Just because you adopt this doesn't mean you're doing a B-poll. It's just not the same state code section.
1,000 businesses at $25 is 25,000, which is 1/10 of a penny. So
we're going to have to be ready to make, if this adds, I'll make a commitment of additional help for him.
Well, yeah, he says that if he has to take this on,
he doesn't
need more people, he needs more money.
Mm-hmm.
Well, so what you talked about just now, when you said forgive these things to Mr. Stevens or whatever, that's what we've done with other people in the past when they take on new stuff. Or
Mm-hmm. I don't disagree. Some those things are relative, but take out and run another water systems.
Yeah.
Not even saying universe, but we do have to look out for our people to make sure that if we keep adding the stock, they ought to get compensated for that, if it's of value to Fluvanna County.
Mm-hmm.
But that wouldn't be, the license fee money might just offset what the salary increases would be, but at least you'd have a way for us to continually have a fairly good document that we can use for cross-checking against special use permits, against zoning, to make sure people are in compliance so they don't get arrears with us 3 years down the line. It's much better to make sure a business is good to go from the get-go and make it easy for them to do that. But anyway, there may be one or two other things, but you could do a merchant's capital tax. I think that's about as bad as a B-poll,
mm-hmm.
but you can't do B-poll and merchant's capital. It's one or the other. Some of the surrounding counties have B-poll, some of the surrounding counties have merchant's capital. We used to have a merchant's capital tax, but again, I'm not advocating for that. I'd much more rather see the business personal property adjusted. So there's not one new thing people have to fill out forms for. This is the same form. Same what they've always been doing. Just because it's changing the rates or changing the percentage, it's still the same thing they've always done. So.
Okay.
One thing that would be helpful going forward, too, and I know we've got it on the columns here, and you can add in those lines. I guess you have them in there already, but to kind of forecast a little bit into 2020 as well.
Our operating revenues?
Yeah, just to give us
a
sense.
We do. I mean, it's just not, they're not flat.
Go ahead. Yeah.
Well, I mean, if you go down, I mean, if you click on the 2020, where the 22, nope, slide up. Click on the 22 million. So we've got a 3% escalation on taxable values for real estate, and it goes up to 0.5% the next year. Then it goes up another 3% the following year.
Because
of the reassessment.
And is it 3.7 FY19 plus 2% baseline? Is that what that is?
Say it again now.
Is the shortfall, is a calculation on the expense side. Based on,
so all the expenditures are basically what the current budgets are. We also have a
current 18 budgets or 19 budgets?
19 budgets, and then we also have is it 2% or 4%?
2% inflation.
2% inflation.
Oh yeah, we have an inflation factor now. Yours,
where to go?
Right there.
There
yeah. So we don't apply it to the schools and some of the other stuff, but to all the operating things. We apply it.
We have out in the schools too. We also have inflation factors built in for the expenses out there. But we have just across the board 2% for all schools.
It doesn't include salaries.
It does. It does.
Yeah, I mean it includes the whole number, the whole department budget, the 2%.
If they do 2%, then that's a 2% raise.
We cover 2% a year out there, but on both sides of the budget. So we've got inflation factors built in there, but also on the revenue side too.
For different things, like if you go to public utilities, we keep that a little more flat 1% at 1% because that's a little unknown, and it's by the SEC.
And another 1%.
Yeah.
And another 1%.
Yeah. I mean, so we are plussing up the revenues based upon certain, you know, conservative inflationary values on the taxable value.
So I guess the basic question, so we can do some modeling between now and next week. Is there anything big on any of your minds that you think we could potentially cut that could then affect the tax rate or fund something else that you wanted more? Is there something you want us to look at and run impacts on?
Can I ask you, did you put something in there for salaries for, did you put a wedge?
For county?
County.
No, ma'am.
Okay, that's not there.
Or for benefits.
Okay, not for benefits. How much did the school return to the funds? They got $600,000.
It was about $1.1 million, and we gave them back about $600,000.
Okay.
$515,000?
Oh, you know, you're right. It was $515,000.
We put $600,000 into the bank.
So yeah. We
gave them $515,000 back. Yep. Mm-hmm. And this year, they'll have a significant amount left at the end of the year. It is a little bit nebulous on how to do that, but I'm not sure. Well, let's put it this way. I don't think there's a chance in heck that you all are going to approve a budget above 95 this year. You may have to some year, but I don't think you're going to do it. You may all fool me, but I don't think you're going to do that. Well, if this budget right now is as tight as it is, and you want to add 2 cents for the school, that takes it to 95.9, and I don't think that's possible.
Can't do it without raising additional revenues, period. That's just the bottom line.
I think so. And
it really needs to be...
And fund stuff out of your water. And if you want to go down at all, like to say you want to go to 93, then find $275,000.
Right.
Because 9 cents or 9 tenths of a penny is about $275,000.
And to be clear to your statement there, you're saying you'd be at 95.9 if you gave the schools the $600,000 that they're asking and gave everybody else nothing.
Yep. Yep.
Right.
Yeah. So just to be clear. That's right. None of these, I mean, there are some things in this column, in this yellow column, that are not hyper super critical.
We could do
all of our budgets ask for the best we're asking for and what we'd really ideally like to have, but sometimes it has to wait to another year, sometimes it's just not the right time, so some of those you wash those away. But remember, there's nothing in there for staff salary, for any staff salary. There's nothing, and there's nothing coming from the state for staff salary for this year, because that was all pushed off to
January 1st of
calendar year 19.
Uh-oh.
So it's in the second year of the biennium. There's nothing in there for benefits. Now, I don't know where we're going to have benefits are going to end up, but we'll know in the next week or two. We should hear the number. I think we'll be pretty good. So let's hope that it stays neutral so we don't send people backwards. But some of these other things, the squad ops, For fire companies and rescue squads. Do you want to put money back into there to fund them? It's going to have an impact. And I think Mr. Sheridan will find some additional revenues in March when he gets his final numbers and starts to look at stuff, but it's not going to be $600,000.
Well, and I would say, I mean, even just on tonight's discussion, you have the $10,000, which I think is pretty much across the board. No, nobody's going to argue about that.
Do you all think that the Foothills Child Advocacy Center is a worthwhile funding at $10,000? If it is, then your $25,000 in excess money just went down to $15,000.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I think it is.
Everything affects that. What's the other one? The
hospice.
They asked for five?
You've got 25 in there, I think. Yeah, they asked for five.
Okay.
And then I think it's also unfair to ask Macho and Rescue to not be basically recompensated for the $60,000 that they've lost in fundraising efforts when we knew that was going to be the case to begin with.
I'd really like to
I think that's
validate those numbers, because I think that's an important look between finance and their finance folks.
I think it's not them, it's all numbers.
We do need to know about the corporations you all pay for and the taxpayers that Louisiana County pays for. It's sometimes a little hard to get into books.
No, and I understand that. But I mean, there was a stated a clear impact on, and the fact that they were raising that much and that the other fire departments weren't raising nearly as much, it's going to have a proportionally larger impact on them.
Yes, but remember, you also paid $65,000 a year in debt service for the new structure.
That's true, too.
And you started that 2 years ago?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
2 or 3 years ago. And that's a 10-year run.
Mm-hmm.
So... And that's not their fault. That's not their fault.
Their debts are 127.
They absorbed 50%.
How much?
If it was our own building, we absorbed 100%.
On across
schools. Pardon?
How much was the teachers' bonuses on cost?
$390,000.
Have they told staff they're going to do a bonus?
They've been promising kind of all along that it's in the budget. They budgeted for it, and the school board is still.
Well, they had talked about doing it in December, and for some reason they didn't do it in December. Miss Johnson?
I think the superintendent was waiting for new board members.
Yeah, and the new board members have looked at it, and the vote so far was just to hold for time being.
They're trying to figure out what else they want to do, or do they want to do it.
Well, pay raises, step increases, health insurance, bonuses, all of those are important tools.
Yeah.
Just got to figure out the combination to do them with.
The schools for that $600,000, was that essentially for those nine positions that they were advocating for?
No, I think that was
a 2% raise.
$700,000 was for the step increases and 2% raise.
Okay.
The other dollars, $258 down the lower, I don't have their sheet. What's in there?
The one thing I think is good with the bonuses, and I'm not in their budget meetings, and I can't tell you, but I think they had set aside that $400,000 in this year's budget, which means that's $400,000, if we just level fund them, that they got in their pocket for next year.
Yes, if they didn't use it for bonuses.
I'm not even talking about not if they don't give the bonuses this year.
That's what I mean.
They have for this year as bonuses. So next year, that means they got $400,000 to start with in their pocket.
Yeah. Well, the board could easily say, school system, you're not getting any more than what's budgeted here. Because there is a strong belief by the superintendent that they will have some balance left at the end of the year. The problem becomes a matter of timing. We won't know until September, October, probably October, what the real number is until the final audits are done. Well, if they want to start the pay raises on July 1st, how do you do that? Well, what you're going to have to do is you're going to almost have to fund it out of fund balance, and then that goes back to fund balance to replace it.
Yeah, but you don't know what the figure is until...
We don't, and the school board would have to pinky swear pretty darn hard to say that they're not going to spend the money at the end of the fiscal year if that's going to be their new money for next year. That's what they want to do. Now, Ms. Eager was at the meeting, too, and she heard the participated in the two-hour discussion, and the chair of the school board was there, too, so... Please chime in because this is obviously a big financial cost and a conundrum in a budget year like this.
Hang on, Ms. Eager.
They got raises last year.
Some did, and some got, and most got bonuses, and some got raises or step increases.
Well, everybody got a $400 bonus last year. Now that's not this fiscal year. That was last year.
It was in May or June.
May or June of last year.
Yeah.
And that's why they were trying to do the same thing this year.
Right.
And that was going to be for the ones who didn't get a raise. And some of them, they tried to target some raises this year. So some people got a step where they got 2% or 3%. And some people got 1%. And some people got a tenth of a percent, right. 2/10 of a percent. Right. So that's what everyone they were trying to... Ms. Johnson, what was the bottom percentage y'all were going to try to do with the with the bonuses?
From last year?
This year.
It was $400, wasn't it?
No, it was $400, $400,000 or $390.
Yeah.
But I think he said it was like a percent and a half.
A percent and a half bonus, yeah.
1.5% bonus.
Based on their salary. Yes.
And some of them with a minimum of...
$400 or $500,
which would mean that the lower employees would be getting
less.
A higher
percentage
of
their salary.
When
you give everybody a $500 bonus on county staff, that means the person who makes $25,000 gets $500, the person who makes $100,000 gets $500. And from a bonus point of view, that's clearly a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's the gift that doesn't keep on giving,
right.
And it's also disproportionately helping folks with the lower bonus. Which is nice. But again, if the bonus from last year and the bonus this year were put together, it could have been gone for regular raises, and we wouldn't be talking about the same raise problem. We could have massaged that. And I know it was Mr. Winkler's first year, and he didn't want to rattle too many things in his first year.
Mm-hmm.
But this year, I don't know where you're going to find $991,000, or even the baseline $600, unless it's within the existing school budget already, and you connect the dots somehow.
So,
can I add a quick comment?
Yes, ma'am.
The bonuses are partly an attempt to compensate our staff at a cheaper overall cost than raise. We don't pay the IRS employer portion on that. We don't pay FICA on that. So it's a way to compensate our people that isn't as costly as raise.
You pay FICA.
Bonuses came into.
But you don't pay retirement.
No, you don't pay retirement, but you pay FICA.
I'm sorry, you do.
Yeah. Right, because that comes out of the paycheck.
Yeah, but you're not double bonusing that out, though.
No, you're not. And right. But part of the problem is when you're trying to do, the bonuses are nice. And when you just can't do anything else, that's great. But what we're talking about is bonus, some pay raises, some step increases in fiscal year 17 and 18, another bonus at the end of fiscal year 18, and then step increases, pay raises, and hold harmless on health insurance again in fiscal year 19. When you wrap that all up, that's a load of money when you get 500 employees. I'm just suggesting, I'm not sure what you can afford this year, next year, next year, next year.
So
Mr. Winkler's great chart that showed the history of pay plans for the schools was really enlightening, but it also doesn't go back and look at the years where it was 4, 6, 8% increases for school staff, and the counties were at none or 1%. So there was a big, huge bolus before that, and then it dropped down and stayed horrible for about 7 years.
So last year, the schools returned to the budget roughly, what, $1.2 million or something like
no,
that?
No, about $600,000.
About a million.
In other words, the original budget was up by, and I don't say off.
A million one.
This year, the projection was 2.7, but you just said 1.6. Is that what
I heard? No, 2.7 was the original ask. And then the ask went down to $2 million, and then the ask went down to $768,000, then the ask went to $991,000.
But I thought the projected overage on the budget this year was...
Non-expenditures is $400,000 to $800,000, not counting
the bonus,
other special money, and not counting the $400,000 set aside for bonuses.
I see.
And so that's still to be determined what happens with
that 1.1 last year. The 1.1 last year, I think they said it was 200 or 220,000 that we got in bonuses last year total.
Right.
So, I mean, yeah, it was small.
It was 1.3 then.
Last year.
But at one point, they were talking about a much larger return.
This year?
This year, yeah.
No, the highest number I've heard is 800,000. Plus some junk over here, which would be fed in state money that has to be carried forward for specific programs, and then the $400,000 that they've already targeted for bonuses that they're not planning on returning because they're planning on spending it. But if it was somewhere between $400,000 and $800,000, and he only really needs $600,000 to implement their full plan for next year, largely their full plan, that's where your $600K is. The problem is we won't know that final number until October.
Yeah, and we're out of fund balance money.
Well, you're just funding the budget with fund balance.
Well, you fund their budget with fund balance, but then that
putting back
anything they've got left.
No, what
I 600,000 just comes all of it. Comes
yeah, what back. I mean is probably. That what I mean is that you know traditionally those excesses have helped to replenish the fund balance.
Well, just like on the county's budget side, when we have excess, it goes
no
back to fund
balance.
Right. So I mean the danger in underfunding the budget or kind of playing these tricks that we've kind of, it's an effort to you know, address a tax rate that's going up, is that you've now essentially played it as close as you can, and there is no more trickery. So you're going to end up with a big increase at some year because you have nothing left to do. And that's a danger, I think.
Yeah,
and if you look at your projections for next year with the $3.7 million shortfall, if we underdo our budget this year, we're just going to hurt ourselves more.
Well, the 3.7 shortfall out there is based on fluff requests.
I understand.
It's packed with everything they wanted that isn't necessarily funded this year. Let's say
it's $1 million. There's 4 cents, and we haven't even tackled anything else, right?
That's true.
Yeah. So I mean, and granted, and you already have your projections in there for the tax increases. So you know, you just start with 4 cents next year, right?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's not
yet. Next year will likely be a better revenue year and better than even the projections for next year. But what if it's not?
Right.
Yeah. So.
Right. And,
you
know, and
if you, it's not, that's a problem.
And you pushed your CIP.
You can't back yourself in the corner too many times before you're squished.
Well, thank goodness we gave them money back and they could buy 3 buses last year.
I mean, yeah, and that's on the CIP for schools. I think we left a little bit of the bus money there. But the problem, we pulled it all.
No, it's there.
Oh, no, that's
no,
right.
It's there.
The problem is none of that affects the tax rate because that's out of CIP.
Yeah.
It's out of cash.
Out of fund balance.
We took the cash part out.
Yeah. Yeah, we put the only cash left in there is $150 for their capital reserve maintenance fund and a little bit for, currently we took it all because we found we could deobligate some old projects that were largely finished and find about $200,000 put against that, so we didn't affect the tax rate.
Did you take out all the
windows? What did we do about the roof that needed the middle school?
Yeah.
Huh?
What
happened with the roof they needed at the middle school? Didn't they have?
Well, is it on here?
No. No, it's the roof at the Carriersbrook.
Carriersbrook.
It's the roof at Carriersbrook.
Yeah.
Correct, Ms. Johnson?
The old middle school.
Yeah, the old middle school.
They've got a roof on there for 2020 for 1.3, but they haven't done anything this year to send us anything about that.
Yeah, they were, I talked to Mr. Stribling, and he was supposed to get us something for the March 7th agenda, but I have not heard from him.
And if they don't stop spending CIP money on stuff that wasn't authorized for the CIP, then we'll have to scrutinize even harder.
Are all the wedges removed in your budget?
There's wedge lines there, but there's no dollars in the wedges because...
That's
there
removed.
No dollars to put in there. Yeah. I had to get to 939 just to get even close. And so the lines on here, the staff pay plan wedge. That was just to balance my budget. Mm-hmm.
And MRR wedge is gone too?
The county.
Yeah. Yep.
And that's funded out of tax, right?
Yeah, and you're not, and I didn't put anything in the capital depreciation funds that we've been talking about for a couple of years. Yeah, we put a penny away in each one of those every year. But
again, that would be funded out of cash, and
yep. We
just...
That's too much sense of the tax rate if you want to do that. But, I mean, it's certainly a worthwhile thing to put money in a capital depreciation fund and let it build up for replacing buildings, whatever it has, the money the board put away years ago for the radio project. But we end up using it for different purposes at really low rates. But good thing that cash had been available, because otherwise it would have been all new debt.
I understand that they everybody would like to have more money.
Yep.
But we are not the highest, and we're not the lowest in what we're paying our school teachers and administrators. It's kind of in the middle. So, and I understand that they'd like to be higher up, but I'm not sure we can handle it this year. Considering that everybody got bonuses and raises last year, and there's no raises.
Not everybody got raises and bonuses. Well, everybody got a bonus, but not everybody got raises per se, because there were like a smidge of nothing.
But were there steps?
And some got steps. So, I mean, you may be talking about $200.
A year.
A year. Mm-hmm. A pay raise of $200. While that's not nothing, it's pretty close to nothing over the course of an entire year.
Yeah.
$12
a month.
Right. After
taxes. Yeah. I went into 2 schools this week to remind myself of what teachers do.
Every time I go to school, I remind myself of how thankful I am the people that like to do that.
Yes.
So that I don't have to.
Yes.
You're welcome.
That's a lot of work.
Central and Carisbrook.
Well, we can talk about the bonus all we want that they're talking about for this year, but that's money we don't control. We can tell them we've got an opinion one way or another, but at the end of the day, that's their decision.
If you back the schools in the corner and say they're not getting any new money, they will likely have to reevaluate what they're going to have left at the end of the year to figure out their best way to apply it, and then work with all of you to decide if we'll allow them to carry it forward to do that. It may be the tool you have to use this year, because, again, is anybody at the table going to vote for something above 95?
I'm not.
Above 90? Oh.
Yeah, I wouldn't think so. So I don't know how you're going to get down from the 93.9, much less.
That's one thing we talked about yesterday.
You've got to start doing some of these things. idiotic not to.
Well, that's why yesterday when we had our meeting, I brought up the meals tax to say if we were to do the funding, I hate to say target it because we can't target it, okay? But the funding to pick up that additional money to get it on the fund balance, then it's up to not only us but the wherever we decide, if we can, to spend that. It's up to us, to them, everyone, to educate the entire community of this is why we want to do this. We're not doing this so we can pad our own pockets. We're doing this to keep from raising the real estate tax and still be able to fund these programs.
Yeah. And there's no guarantee we would get the meals tax anyhow, which is...
Well, that's what I'm saying.
Best case scenario, it would start January 1 and not really knowing...
Half a year.
Yeah, right, you get a half a year, and how much would you get that first half a year?
You know, it's so funny that it takes us so many years.
You ain't going to know what
in 1997, you have a report where all of that was talked about. And just about had a vote. And one supervisor said they were going to vote, and at the last minute they backed out. So we've been talking about this. I mean, it was a nice written report.
Yes, it was.
We've updated it 25 times since then because the same discussion is going on.
Bell County does not have the same revenue sources that other counties have. Therefore, we're disproportionately weighted on residential
I'm ready to move forward and do what we have to do to bring some more.
All righty.
Do you want Mr. Sheridan to come next week?
Yes, if he can.
It would probably be better. The quicker he can get here, the better off we'd be.
I think so. It
gives us a chance to make more decisions.
He needs support from you all on wherever he's heading on this, too, because, when a single individual has to change something on a tax, there's some heat there. But if there's support from the community and the board, because that's what we need to do for our community, it's probably gooder.
Commissioner Revenue is the only person that has that responsibility for.
Yep.
Okay, so we need to write a bill to get that changed.
Well, he and I talked about it. I just think it's silly.
I bet he would be relieved if he didn't have to do it.
No, I mean, it's undue on him
Land use rates?
No matter which way he goes.
You think he would enforce land use and enforce, the personal property forms being filled out and this stuff, but to have to set the rates and enforce?
Mm-hmm. Right.
It's kind of a double whammy.
All righty. Well, I think we've had a good discussion tonight, and we need to get to closed session or we're going to be midnight getting out of here.
Okay, we're going to prepare the advertisement in advance and get it ready for 2 weeks from now. We're going to prepare it at 94.9 as the max advertised, and then you can decide that night what you want to change it to.
Why the 9? Why do you
think... It's one penny away from where his budget is.
What's 94?
Well, 94 is fine, too.
No, 94 is too skinny. You want?
Yeah, I don't want to lose the flexibility.
9.9 gives you 200.
Anyway,
94.9 that gives you not Charlottesville.
All it's going to be is a document that we're going to have a placeholder under 94.9. You can change it to whatever you want that night in the fly. We just need to know so we can advertise.
All righty, Mr. O'Brien.
And you can go down
can
from
you
there.
Please read it to get us in the closed session, sir.
Mr. Chair, I move the Savannah County Board of Supervisors enter into a closed meeting pursuant to provisions of Section 2.2-3711A3, Section 2.2-3711A7, Section 2.2-3711A8 of the Code of Virginia 1950 as amended for the purpose of discussing real estate litigation and legal matters.
Second.
Motion's been made by Mr. O'Brien, seconded by Ms. Booker. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Chair votes aye. We're now in closed session. Thank you all for coming in tonight. We do appreciate everything. Are you ready?
Yep.
Right, Mr. Chair, I move the closed meeting be adjourned and the Savannah County Board of Supervisors convene again in open session. I don't know how to memorize. Board of Supervisors does hereby certify that to the best of each member's knowledge, one, only public business matters lawfully exempted from the open meeting requirements under Section 2.2-3711A of the Code of Virginia 1950 as amended, and two, only such public business matters as were identified in the motion by which the closed meeting was convened were heard, discussed, or considered in the meeting.
Second. Right. Motion made by Mr. O'Brien, seconded by Mr. Weaver. Ms. Seeger.
I'm getting it.
Mr. Weaver?
Room in my brain, I'll put it in there. Aye.
Ms. Booker?
Aye.
Mr. O'Brien?
Aye.
Chair votes aye. We are about out of closed session. Ms. Eager, you said you had something you wanted to bring up.
I wanted to see, you got the email about Parkinson Wareham this month from Marcia Langostino.
Parkinson's Awareness Month
is in April, and she's involved with the group because she has Parkinson's.
Yeah.
She's the wife
of the Congress member, right? Yeah.
And she's involved with Jake Fox.
Michael J. Fox.
Mm-hmm. Part of his charity.
So does the board want to adopt a resolution, a proclamation supporting
Parkinson's
Awareness Month?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
She'd like to have come to a board meeting and have a picture taken with us, and then that'll be posted on Michael J. Fox's.
I like those ideas. Mm-hmm. It's been our general policy that we don't do this because then we get lots of requests. I mean, I'm okay doing it, but if we're going to do it, let's just be consistent about it.
Well, some of the other ones were a little more politically
unpalatable.
This one's just pretty normal. Somebody does a heart association or the Cancer Society or Parkinson's.
Yeah, I got no problem with those.
You
and besides,
email,
I mean, I'm getting Michael.
What are we doing with Michael J.?
I have
was,
a very good friend who
talks. Oh.
This is Parkinson's.
Oh, no, I need colon cancer awareness. I need Parkinson's then, please.
Okay.
Because I got colon cancer awareness one. So.
Okay. And then the other thing I wanted to bring up was I've had several calls about Oliver Creek Road and Kathy's Lane. On Kathy's Lane, Liberty bought four lots or some acreage and divided it into four lots from John Gooch. And the place is a wreck. They keep all of their trash. I talked to them once. It was cleaned up, but now it's back. And
John Gooch bought it, you say?
No,
no, Liberty bought it from John.
Oh, John Gooch sold it.
And sold it to Liberty.
Have they built homes on it?
Two homes so far, and there'll be two more. And we don't have it in our ordinance to have a dumpster on a construction site, nor a porta potty.
So Liberty is making the mess?
Yeah.
I thought you had to have a porta john on the site.
I've been told it's not in our ordinance.
They do in our neighborhood.
And they just throw in the trash anyway.
Yeah, it's all over the place. Now, they did clean it up.
Would this fall under our new ordinance for the excessive trash?
I don't think so, but I can ask Scott about it and have him go visit that site.
Yeah,
he's
Scott can go up there and be a pain.
He's aware of it because the woman who called me, Pat Burke, has been in contact with him. And then there's several houses on Oliver Creek Road that you just can't believe are the mess. One of them has had a dumpster in front of it for a year. And it's you know, there's trash everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
It's really, I don't know what we can do, but.
That dumpster was trash there.
This is our Steve, you home. Know the one on Hayden Martin and how
all that. It's about 10,000% better than it used to be.
No, that white styrofoam, it's in the woods.
Oh, that's why it disappeared.
What's that person right here on 53 that's before that nice little brick house, and they just added some section when you look down?
It's terrible.
I saw that.
We did a big meeting last week with all of our folks, sheriffs and attorneys. It's just pathetic. It's And you don't see it except this time of year, but there's trash everywhere back there.
Everywhere.
You know,
can we figure out what we can do?
Oh, no, we are. The sheriff, county house attorney, Fred's office, my office, planning, code inspections, public works, we all had a big meeting. Mm-hmm. And what they're working on now is the checklist for each one of those and the letter formats that we'll be using because we're going to start doing enforcements.
Okay, because I think adopting dumpsters and porta-johns is pretty easy, and that would take care of at least construction.
Can you suggest that to the Planning Commission?
Sure.
When you meet with them?
Mm-hmm.
Because that way they can percolate it up through there and staff can take it for action.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That'd be great, because then if your Planning Commission members are supportive of that too, that'd be helpful, and staff can take it for action to get it prepared with Fred.
See, many builders do automatically put it up because it's
easier
to put it all in there.
Yeah, they do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
My neighbors
would
be PO'd if they put dumpsters up because they take trash and put it in their own fun. And then they go digging the dumpsters to take the pieces of wood out because they want some of the wood, scrap wood and stuff.
Going to build something.
All my old people in my neighborhood. So I'm just afraid one's going to break the
news. Who are old people?
They're all a lot older than me.
Is that about 100 or 110?
Might be 110.
Well, here's one.
It's a mileage.
You're
not age.
So anyway, remember, 4 o'clock regular meeting next week, and then 7 o'clock work session. We'll have dinner in between. And
the work session is budget.
Yeah, budget. Right.
March 7th.
March 7th, right.
March 7th.
So just so 4 o'clock is the work
regular meeting.
Okay.
Regular meeting. And
then work session at 7. Okay, gotcha.
But just really look through your budget stuff. If you want me to change the tax rate, tell me where you want me to look to cut something. And if there's stuff on those lists that you think, well, we really need that stuff, like some of those personnel things or whatever, or a wedge for insurance, tell me so we can start modeling that.
And that was the one thing, I hate to bring this up now, Ms. Johnson has left. That was the one thing yesterday in the meeting is anybody out there?
Just in case.
There's nobody out there. Kelly's saying nope. All right. But that's the one thing that he always kept going back to. Mr. Winkler.
Oh, okay.
I built this into our budget to give this bonus, and I promised the employees this bonus. It just, I wanted to wait till the new board members got on. And
well, that was new board members. I'm not thrilled about that.
But having said that, that's what I say. Of that $900,000 he has, and he said he could live with 6. Guess what? 400,000 of it's already in your budget.
Yes, and he said he's going to have 4,800 left over. So let's say it's on the low end. Well, there's 800,000 right there. That's more than he really says he needs. He only needs 6. So that's why I'm not too concerned about putting money over. But it is a financial conundrum because remember, you can't
tell him what to do.
You can't tell him what to do,
right.
And you kind of have to have a really good financial relationship.
When I brought up meals tax, did any of y'all just get a terrible taste in your mouth?
No. We've been talking about it forever.
It's one of those things, because that's not something that we make that decision on. We just decide whether or not to put it on a ballot. The people will make that decision. Mm-hmm. Do you want it or do you not?
6 years ago, I think they tried to bring it up, and you'll get all the restaurant owners have to complain about it, so you will get that.
Well, I mean, I've talked to a couple of them already, and a couple of the major one I talked to looked at me, and she goes, I knew y'all would have to do something like this. I'm not going to like it. I'm not going to tell you I like it, but you know what? I understand what you're doing. And I said, I promise you I'm going to keep buying biscuits.
It is just a norm nowadays, but it would be nice, although I don't like limiting your restriction. I don't like limiting stuff. It would be nice, though, if when Fred gets back with the research on that, on if you could target it, that will help you sell it. If you target to a specific
business. That's why I said that. If we can target it to the schools or to fire and rescue or whatever we target it to, we could say we're going to target it to the replacement of emergency vehicles.
Are you in the referendum that we were talking about trying to do for the broadband thing? I mean, that. Some form or another, you'd get it.
That's another thing is, remember, those meetings are next Tuesday and Wednesday. Tuesday night at Antioch Baptist Church, and Wednesday at the 8th at Kent Story ARC.
They made it on Wednesday night?
Tuesday and Thursday.
Oh, Thursday. I thought you said Thursday.
Okay,
that's just another meeting.
Let me look at my calendar.
All right. Do we have a motion to adjourn?
So moved.
Okay. Second. Motion made by Ms. Booker and seconded by Mr. Weaver. All in favor?
Aye.
Yeah.
I've never even heard about this before.
All in favor?
I've already written a letter to him because I thought it was a short notice.
Hold on.
Here I am.
All in favor to adjourn?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Chair votes aye. 5-0. Now talk all you want.
This is the first time.